Mikhail Urbaniak group, Crazy Girl from 1971, solid jazz out of Poland. Thanks for tuning in. This has been an Experiment with Time on WRCT Pittsburgh. This show airs every Saturday night at midnight. Have a great night, folks. Take care of yourselves.
Playing the radio with no particular place to go. Riding along in my
WRCT Pittsburgh, music for people on the go.
I sent her to tell her the way I feel. So I told her softly and sincere, and she leaned and whispered in my ear.
When it rains, it pours, and it's just getting worse and worse for Donald Trump's vice presidential running mate, J.D. Vance. I told you yesterday how in the previous 10 days, he lost 9 points of favorability with the American public, effectively losing 1 point of favorability every single day. And we have more unearthed videos. These aren't leaks. These are videos that are public, but they got very little attention when he did a lot of these interviews. And they are very, very bad. Once again, revitalizing the question, can this guy survive? Can he possibly stay on as Donald Trump's vice presidential running mate? In this first video, J.D. Vance, doubling down on the people without kids thing, says that people without children are sociopathic, psychotic, and also deranged. I don't think this will bring you any new votes.
Right, there's just these basic cadences of life that I think are really powerful and really, really valuable when you have kids in your life. And the fact that so many people, especially in America's leadership class, just don't have that in their lives, you know, I worry that it makes people more sociopathic and ultimately our whole country a little bit less less mentally stable. And of course, you talk about going on Twitter. Final point I'll make is, you go on Twitter and almost always the people who are most deranged and most psychotic are people who don't have kids at home.
So this is all so crazy. Now, I can tell you as a dad that sometimes I think being a dad is what's making me lose my mind, not the opposite. But he's making the opposite argument here. But from a political strategy standpoint, like whatever your opinion is about his particular comments, who do you attract by attacking those without children? Especially since at the end of the day, even if you don't have children, you're someone's kid. And thanks to someone's decision, implicit or explicit, to have a kid, you exist. So it's just a very, very strange approach. And, you know, when every time these videos come out, there will be someone from the Trump campaign or a spokesperson for J.D. Vance or whatever who will say, oh, you know, there's missing context there. And the comments are being distorted in some material way. You know, check out the entire interviews if you can sit through these things. Sometimes they're 15 minutes. Sometimes they're much longer. It doesn't seem to me like there's any missing context at all. Now, here's another one in which J.D. Vance says that he and Trump will go to war against the childless. Again, who is going to hear this and say, I wasn't voting for J.D. Vance and Trump, but after hearing this, now I am? Really hard to imagine. And we'll listen to a little more of this just to give you the context that some claim is missing.
The best way to invest in it is to ensure the next generation actually exists. So I think sending those signals via policy, but the cultural messaging of politicians is important. I also think, just to be a little stark about this, I think we have to go to war against the anti-child ideology that exists in our country. Mm-hmm. A few weeks ago, no, Twitter is not real life. But I forget even what caused it, but there was this ridiculous effort by millennial feminist writers to talk about why having kids was not a good thing, why they were glad they didn't have kids, and even encouraging people who had had children to talk about why they regretted having children, which of course is like
Mother's Day book.
On Mother's Day, which is like psychologically deranged to ask mothers on Mother's Day to talk about why they regretted having children. And what it made me realize is that so much of what drives elite culture is mediocre millennial journalists who haven't gotten out of their career what they thought they would.
Which, by the what's funny is when he talks about mediocre millennial journalists, as a millennial himself, the fabricated backstory of J.D. Vance through his writings and interviews, I would argue, is actually an example of what he's claiming to denounce here.
Right. And the thing is, everybody can be an exceptional mother and father. Not everybody can be an exceptional journalist at the New York Times.
That's true.
And not enough people have accepted that if they put their entire life's meaning into their credential, into where they went to school, into what kind of job they have.
Which is mostly what he did, actually.
If you put all of your life's meaning into that, you're going to be the sort of person who asks women to talk about how they regret having children. You're going to be a sad, lonely, pathetic person, and you're going to know it internally, so you're going to project it onto people who have actually built something more meaningful with their lives. I think we have to go to war against that ideology and the people behind it, because we need to say to the people in my hometown, I've seen this with, just to be honest, with my sister. I love my sister is just the best person. I love her to death. And sometimes, she'll say things to me like, maybe I should have delayed having kids. Maybe I should have went to school. Maybe I should have did this or that. And it's like, Lindsay, you've been a great mom. Mm-hmm. Your children are happy. They're healthy.
Don't aspire to anything else, Lindsay.
You've taken good care of them. You've shown me. She was my older sister. She took care of me a lot in a very chaotic home. People like my sister should not feel like the cultural messaging is your life is inadequate.
This is bonkers stuff. And one of my immediate reactions when Trump chose Vance, and Vance was not an unknown to me, right? I mean, I followed his political career, read his book, saw how his public persona over the last 4 years was a total 180 from the book, seemingly for naked and craven political aspirations. This guy was a known entity. My immediate reaction, aside from kind of low energy and lack of charisma, was I can't think of any way in which Vance expands the electorate for Trump. Just didn't seem to be any way. Republican Tim Miller, who was on the show earlier this week, agreed with me. He doesn't see any way that Vance expands the voting base for Trump. And now, especially with all these comments about the childless and having less political power and being deranged and psychopathic and sociopathic, I think this is now doing material net harm to their voting base. And the question I have for you is, does J.D. Vance survive this? Let me know. info@davidpakman.com. Donald Trump had what appeared to be a very serious mental breakdown on Truth Social yesterday, surrounding the time during which he was heading towards, after and before, the completely abortive attempt at an interview at the NABJ, where he said Kamala used to be Indian, but now she became black.
Truth Central.
Yeah. So he took to Truth Central and had some of the following choice words. Getting ready to land in Chicago, unlike Crazy Kamala. They told me and Crazy Kamala Harris that you could not do this event with Zoom. It is not allowed or acceptable. She declined, and I'm getting ready to land in Chicago in order to be there. Now I am told she is doing the event on Zoom. What's going on here? Crazy Kamala disrespectfully refused to attend the NABJ conference, but I'm on the way to meet with them now in Chicago, because of which she'll probably end up doing. She has no choice. But remember, it is only for that reason. Then engaging caps lock. Russia never invaded Ukraine under Trump. Iran never invaded Israel under Trump. Nobody invaded anybody under Trump. My recollection of world history is a little different. China never even thought of invading Taiwan under Trump. Biggest ever embarrassment in Afghanistan would have never happened under Trump. There was no inflation under Trump. That's a lie. What a different world it would be under Trump. That's true. Trump continuing, focusing on Catholics. A large group of Catholics is launching a major political campaign against crazy Kamala Harris. Finally, Catholics are literally being persecuted by this whack job. Just ask the Knights of Columbus. They say that she is the most anti-Catholic person ever to run for high office in the U.S. This respected group wants all Catholics to vote against Kamala, and they are 100% correct. P.S. Jewish people are treated even worse. If that's possible, they are dropping Kamala and the Democrats like flies, and it's about time. And finally, crazy Kamala Harris voted the worst vice president in American history. That's a lie. Needed a concert to bring people into the Atlanta arena, and they started leaving 5 minutes into her speech. I don't need concerts or entertainers. I just have to make America great again. Let me give you three words here to describe all of this. Terrified, furious, and triggered. Terrified, furious, and triggered. These are not normal outbursts. This is not traditional, healthy behavior for a nearly 80-year-old man. And I want to delve into the Jewish part that he mentions. Jews are leaving Democrats in droves. Let's talk about that next. Donald Trump appeared on the Sid and Friends radio show, Sid and Friends in the Morning, and he just launched another one of these wild attacks on Jews. Jews need their heads examined, so on and so forth. On Truth Social, he also said that Jewish voters are leaving Democrats. I'm going to address that in a moment, but let's listen to what Trump had. Here's Trump's message to Jewish Americans.
Any Jewish person that voted for her or him or whoever it's going to be, I assume it's going to be her, anybody that did that is should have their head examined. If you love Israel or if you're Jewish, because a lot of Jewish people do not like Israel and they happen to be in New York. You know that.
Yes.
But if you are Jewish, regardless of Israel, if you're Jewish, if you vote for a Democrat, you're a fool, an absolute fool. They have
77 or eight, what was it? 85% of Jews, I guess, are fools, according to Trump. Not a way, you know, J.D. Vance isn't winning you any votes and saying this isn't winning you any votes.
I've let Jewish people down since Obama at levels that nobody could believe possible. You know, 15 years ago, the strongest lobby in all of Washington was Israel. It was by far the strongest. Nobody would say anything bad about Israel. Today, it's like nobody says anything good, except Republicans, by the way. Nobody says anything good about it. So it's a hell of a change. I assume you know exactly what I'm saying.
Oh, I know.
15 years ago, you couldn't say a bad thing.
No.
This, according to Trump, means that just about every Jewish American is a fool, I guess, other than his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, and his own daughter, Ivanka Trump, who converted to Judaism. That we must all be foolish, because alongside Black Americans, Jewish Americans are the most left-wing voting bloc in the country, period, bar none. And what is important to consider is that Trump is expressing his desires when he says Jews are abandoning Democrats, as he did on Truth Social. Jews are not abandoning Democrats. It's just not happening. There's no evidence that it's happening. Are there some Jewish Republicans? Yes. On a percentage basis, is it a very small number? Yes, it's very small. And this is what happens when Trump is just completely out of ideas as to how to run against Kamala Harris. And next week, we'll talk about the more general backfire of the Republican approach against Kamala right now. They tried. She's a DEI hire. He tried. She used to be Indian, but she became Black. They tried. Her laugh is a cackle. They tried all of these different things. They're out of ideas. And so what do they go back to? The exact same stuff Trump was trying to use against Biden. Things like Jews are fools if they vote for Democrats. He said that when it came to Biden, and now he's saying it when it comes to Kamala Harris. The best advice I've heard for how Trump should be running this campaign came from Tim Miller earlier this week, who said, none of this stuff is working. You should just run against her the way successful Republicans run against Democrats. Whether it's true or not, the right approach is to say, this is someone who will raise your taxes. This is someone who will enact stifling regulations. The usual package, right? Forget about adjudicating whether it's true or not. And I believe 99% of it is not true. That seems like a much more effective approach than this insanity where they are just dissuading voters at every turn. Let me know what you think. Hit that subscribe button. If you're watching on YouTube, help us get to 2.5 million subscribers and we will take the quickest of breaks and then be back with something very special for you here. It is great to welcome to the program today Ken Block, owner of Simpatico Software Systems and author of Disproven, My Unbiased Search for Voter Fraud for the Trump Campaign, the data that shows why he lost and how we can improve our elections. And also Mike Lindell, CEO and inventor, founder of MyPillow, known almost just by the single word pillow increasingly in modern society. It's really incredible. Listen, gentlemen, I know that you two have different perspectives on what happened in 2020. And as we think about what may happen in 2024, I think it would be interesting to have a conversation about it. Let me first go, because to me, the default is the election was not stolen. So if someone is making the positive case that it was, I think it's fair to start there. Mike, at this point, where do you look? Which states do you point to? What is the mechanism through which you believe the 2020 election was stolen?
Well, I'm as you know, since the spring of 2021, I've been all about getting rid of electronic voting machines and going to paper ballots hand counting. It's all about the election platforms. The 2020 election was just the, the eye opener that there was problems with computers throughout our country, and that was everywhere. That wasn't a, I went and bought everybody's voter rolls for the 2020 election. And for example, in the state of Alabama, I went and met with that Secretary of State, and he had 4,600 and some people that voted that were over the age of 110. Now, that doesn't mean they voted for Trump or Biden. That just means there's a problem with our computers, because obviously nobody voted at that age.
Okay. So if maybe to focus this in a little more, because I think we would all agree that the rightful winner of Alabama was Donald Trump, and that had no real impact ultimately on getting to 270 electoral votes. Are there states, Mike, like, for example, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Michigan, Georgia, Arizona, which you believe were actually won by Donald Trump in 2020?
Oh, yeah, they all were. And when I say they all were, when you have these computers, it's like when you skim off of a casino. You can't just skim one game or even the food or a slot machine. You have to skim them all, or it'll stand out like a sore thumb. As we went into the night of 2020, got into the early morning hours on November 4th, they stopped everything. That was a deviation. I always look at deviations.
Stopped what? Hold on, Mike. They who and stopped what? Just so Ken can respond substantively.
The election officials in all five of them states stopped, including North Carolina. They stopped counting. They said, we're going to stop counting. It had never happened before in history. Stop counting. And then we've seen these deviations come down. I'll give an example. One deviation in Michigan would be 106,000 votes came down for Biden and 3,000 for Donald Trump. And they said that was because there was the mail-in votes, when in Michigan they were actually counted on the morning of the 3rd, not in the middle of the night on the 4th. Then you had Pennsylvania.
Well, let's just work with that.
I do want to add one more.
Okay.
And because it stands out so big. Pennsylvania ended up with more votes than voters, which has never been addressed. And it's never been addressed.
All right. Well, let's see if we can address it. Ken, Mike's made a number of specific assertions there. They stopped counting the votes. There were lopsided numbers of votes counted. There were more votes than voters in Pennsylvania. How does a guy like you, who was paid by the Trump campaign to look for some of this stuff, how do you react to what Mike says?
Yeah, so some of the claims require context, and some of the claims require proof that I have to take a look at, but I'm going to try and do them in the order in which Mike laid them out, just so I don't lose track of them.
Yeah.
Mike identifies a problem that's a real problem, which is, I like to call it crappy data, for lack of a better word. And he called out Alabama, which, by the way, charges $37,000 for its voter data. Which I find,
I know, that's what I paid for.
It's an outrageous thing that they do, and it's wrong all by itself. But at least you can get your data from Alabama. You can't get it from Massachusetts or Indiana or New Hampshire or a bunch of other states. I like to pick on New Jersey when we talk about crappy data. New Jersey has 25,000 voters with a year of birth of 1,800. 8,000 of them voted in the 2020 election. But that's not fraud. What it is lousy data. Computer systems, when they don't know what a date is, if they don't have a date, they will default in a date like 1900 or 1800. So it's important to have some context to what it really means when you have voters who are impossibly old. It often means that election workers don't have that voter's date of birth, which by itself is a big problem, because if you don't know when the voter is born, you can't determine when they die.
So that's super interesting. So on that first one, Ken, what you're saying, when Mike says this number of people over age 110 voted in Alabama, what you're saying is by virtue of knowing these systems, there's some default birth year that's put in there for people for whom they don't have a birth year. It is a problem, but it's not fraud.
In the case of New Jersey's data, where all of those voters share the year of 1800 for their year of birth, that's what explains it. If you see 1901, 1900, 1850, more often than not, those are default years of birth. Okay. That computer's just...
Well, hold on, Mike. You laid out a few things. So that's an interesting one on that, Ken. Fair.
Yeah. I applaud Mike for bringing that up and talking about it, because to have really good election integrity, you can't have it if you don't have all of the necessary identifying information for your voters, and that includes having the date of birth.
Okay.
So, we could have an entire show just about crappy data, but if we're going to move...
I want to bring up crappy data, though.
But wait, Mike, I don't want this to get so lopsided in opportunity to speak. No, let's let Ken at least...
This ties right into what this exact thing before he moves on. One of the things he said, okay, when you say data... One of the things I looked at, this is very important because this is why I'm involved with everything I'm involved in. In November and December of 2020, I spent every waking hour getting the voter rolls and stuff like he's talking about. Alabama cost me almost $40,000. But one of the things I found in the 2020 election that people had voted in other states or in other counties they didn't live. Now, I had a hard time believing that people in Minnesota said, hey, there's 5,000 of us. Let's go jump into Wisconsin and vote for Biden. People are genuinely good people. And you had over 5,000 people that voted in Wisconsin that don't live there. And when they don't live there, these are the things. So is that bad data? Or what it is.
Well, that's a new claim, though, Mike. I want to try to move sequentially through the claims. 5,000 from Minnesota voting in Wisconsin is a new claim. So let me go back to Ken. Ken, what about, for example, more votes than voters in Pennsylvania?
So I've heard that claim made before. I haven't seen, when you look at the actual number of votes cast, it's not bigger than the number of registered voters. I've never seen an actual official communication from a Secretary of State's office of Pennsylvania that shows that there were more votes that were cast.
I haven't either.
There are registered voters. So, we're not going to get to the heart of that one here today. But Mike, I'd be very interested in talking to you offline on where you get that data from, so I can go
deeper
into it.
It's not the data. It's not the data. It's a fact. You could probably even Google it on the internet. There was over 400,000 more votes than voters. They certified anyway. And as it sits right now, it's about 80-some thousand in the 2020 election, more votes than voters. Like if we walked out of a room, there's 10 of us that voted, it comes back 15-5.
That would be an astonishing, astonishing fact if it was true. I don't believe it's true, but I want to look for sure. I want to talk about the duplicate voter claim. Because in my work for the Trump campaign, not only did they ask my company to data mine for dead voters, to data mine for voters who were voting twice in two different states, we did this work for the campaign. We found hundreds of provable people who voted twice. And Mike, you used Wisconsin and Minnesota?
No, absolutely not.
Not absolutely not. You said 5,000 Minnesota voters went to Wisconsin.
You're cherry picking out. I'm giving you examples, David. You didn't sit here and tell me I had to come with all these sheets if you wanted. I could. Every single state in the 2020 election had people vote in that state that did not live in that state. That's a fact. You can check it out, every single one. Now, if you go to a county at the county level, maybe when I've checked counties, let's say there's 100 people in the county, in my own county, that don't live there that voted. I don't believe that those people actually came in to commit a crime. I believe that their names were taken off the voter rolls. That's all with done with computerized, done with computer.
Mike, you've made the claim. We have to allow Ken to address it. I think I was probably registered in more than one place at some point, which is completely legal. As long as I'm only voting in one place, I think
this
that's
isn't
fine.
About people that
hold on,
move,
Michael,
David.
But hold on, Mike, hold on, Mike, hold on, hold on, Mike.
Tiffany, not about people that move.
Tiffany Trump, for example, I think was registered in two places. She only voted
you
in
can't
one.
Vote in two places.
Ken, what about the voting where move. You don't live? Address voting where you don't live, Ken.
Okay, so there are two outcomes in voting where you don't live. One is you have somebody who lives in Idaho who casts a vote in Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one example of a type of situation. The other type of situation is you have someone who takes two bites of the apple. They actually vote in two different places. Both of these situations happened in 2020. And when people took two bites of the electoral apple, they were committing a felony. When somebody lived in one state and voted in a different state, and I evaluated this specific claim for the Trump campaign, they brought it to my attention and they asked me to review it and vet it to see if it was going to survive legal scrutiny. And the claim was that in Georgia, 15,000 people cast votes in Georgia who didn't live there. And while it's true that there were people who cast votes in Georgia who didn't live there, where it gets tricky is a lot of those people were members of the military. And they were serving at Fort Benning, which is one of the largest military installations in the country. More than 100,000 members of the military work there, and they cycle in and out of there all the time. And members of the military are allowed by law to vote where they're serving. So that claim would never have made it very far in the legal system, because that's the only place where these claims matter. If you're going to contest an election and you're going to try to get the results overturned in the legal system, if the claim isn't going to survive legal scrutiny, it's not a worthwhile claim. In this circumstance, there were more voters identified in Georgia than any other state who didn't live in Georgia but yet cast the vote there. And that maps on top of Georgia having the largest military installation in the country in the form of Fort Benning. So, Mike,
do you believe when Ken says that, do you think Ken's confused? Do you think Ken's lying? Because he was paid to find this stuff by the Trump campaign.
I got $30 million in this, David. I paid a little money out, too. And here's what we did. I didn't concentrate on Georgia overturning any election. This has been 3 years where we're going, we need to get rid of the electronic voting machines, the computers. Here's what we did. Pick a county, pick any county. I'll pick Carver County, my county. We had canvassers go out. We got the voter rolls from the county, who voted, who was put on the voter rolls, and who voted in the election. We went out and it was usually six people or more that says lived in a house. Now, I've lived here all my life. We went down, the canvassers go down, they knock on Amy Schultz or whatever, her house, and say, Amy, you're living here by yourself. It says seven people here voted. Well, then we look at the name. She goes, no, it's just been me, like always. And we take the six people that voted. Now we investigate them. Four of them live in another state. Two of them are deceased, okay? So then we take those four and we reach out to them. Did you vote here? No. No, they did not vote there. The people, we contact the people. This is called canvassing, to physically back up what the data is saying. And the data says they voted in that county or that state. I'm not here to tell you something to overturn an election. I'm here to tell you when you
yeah, and
get
no
rid
one's
of the
brought that
voting.
Up at least yet, Mike.
Right.
Mike, in
we
terms
need to
of
get
what,
rid of the
in terms right. of the view that Ken is presenting though, like do you think Ken's just wrong or he is incompetent and couldn't find the fraud you claim exists? Like what do you hear when Ken says this?
This has took me 3 years, and we also have a lot of other data to back this up. Under the Freedom of Information Act, we were able to get the cast vote records, which come out the machines for one third of the United States. So we take the cast vote records, we take the canvassing, the on the ground canvassing,
Then
we take the voter rolls and we combine all three, and they all three match. Now, but the only thing that they match, but the people didn't commit crime. The people didn't go, I'm going to go vote twice. That's not true. You're going to have that. But this is in a massive scale using names with the dirty voter rolls. Like Wisconsin has 7.2 million names on their voter rolls. And if every registered voter voted in Wisconsin, it's 4.1 million. Why do they need those other 3 million names?
Okay, that's a good specific question, Mike. That's a good specific question, Mike. Ken, do you think Mike believes this stuff, or do you think Mike's confused?
Oh, I'm confident Mike fully believes this stuff. I mean, he has put his money where his mouth is. I don't think anybody can claim that Mike doesn't fully believe in what he's talking about. So for that reason alone, I give him credit for his conviction for sure. I'm trying to flow as we sort of jump from
it's hard to do
one
so
thing
yeah
to another, but what I'd like, and I'm just trying to pick the thing that I think will have the most impact as we talk. I like to talk about electronic voting machines at a high level for a minute. If you don't protect yourself, you leave yourself open to either external forces hacking those machines or somebody slipping some code in there potentially to alter the count itself, right? There's some nefarious computer hacking things that you can do. There are plenty of protective steps that you can take to minimize and eliminate the possibilities for that. I turn to the casino industry to look for that. You have slot machines, which are individual computers, and I do a lot of work with the gaming industry. You can absolutely ironclad protect yourself from ensuring that the wrong software is not running in your slot machines and, you know, making other people rich who are just know how to game the system. You have no proof and there's no realistic outcome where a hand count is going to be more accurate than a machine count. Let's just talk about Maricopa County in Arizona, because that's been the punching bag for a lot of this.
Yep.
There's about 1.5 million votes cast in Maricopa in 2020. Each ballot that gets cast in Arizona has anywhere from 10, 20, maybe 30 different races on it. So imagine trying to hand count 30 million different vote tallies from 1.5 million ballots. It's a monumental effort, one that's almost certainly going to lead to errors because human beings can't do a repetitive process like that in general, anywhere near as capably and dependably as a computer to do it.
Well, let's ask Mike if he even would concede that. I'm curious, Mike, do you agree that the machines in general are more accurate at counting than people?
No, 1,000,000% no. I have met with UK officials, France, Belgium, Germany, the Netherlands, met with them all, and we devised the best hand counting system in the world. It was used in Osage County, Missouri, in an actual election 2 years ago. Democrats, Republicans working together. We got done at the same time of the machines with 100% accuracy. Now, Argentina, last summer, a judge ruled there, finally said, hey, we got to go to paper ballots, hand count. They can flip their country over, and they did it in 4 months, faster than the Netherlands, which took 5 months. And Taiwan just did it. Ecuador just did it. All these countries have outlawed machines, computers around the world. The Philippines, they've all outlawed them. We just had, and when you talk about, he's using Maricopa County for an example. In the Kerry Lake race, remember, 242 machines went down at the same time. And that was impossible. They're not tied to the internet, so how could they all go down at the same time with the same exact problem? You watched in Georgia this last fall, an Obama-appointed judge, the curling case, 3.5 years went on. She finally said, you know what? These experts that looked inside these machines say there's problems. We're going to let this case go forward. Halderman hacked in with a ballpoint pen into the machine and flipped the election, and it's still pending in court right now in Georgia.
So you have all these examples. Mike, if we there's so much that you're dumping on us that it's hard to keep up with each one of the claims. Even okay. Republicans in Maricopa, to my knowledge, were satisfied that no one was disenfranchised. But like, Ken, how do you deal with when Mike goes, they all went down, disconnected from the internet, it's all crazy?
So I would ask, have you looked at what it would take to turn Maricopa County into a hand count county?
Absolutely, we have. We've looked at every place in the United States. Remember, we had that prior to 2000. This is what we had, Ken. You don't know what goes on to those black boxes that are sitting there. We just want a fair election in our community.
A hand count wouldn't stop somebody from voting somewhere where they don't live.
Yeah, absolutely, but it would stop for a computer where one guy can press and change millions of votes or tens of thousands of votes.
But that wasn't the argument you were making for what took place, though, Mike. That wasn't the argument you were making.
100%. I'm saying that people didn't do this. It was done with computers. You understand that, David? I'm saying this was the uniparty, deep state, globalist, CCP. People want to know who did this, okay? And yes, it was computers that were used.
It was computers, okay.
Do you know who Tony Fabrizio is, Mike?
No.
He's Trump's pollster. He paid Fabrizio tens of millions of dollars every election, 16, 20. I'm sure he's polling for him now. He exit polled 30,000 swing state voters and asked them who they voted for and why. And what he learned and what he published in a report that everybody can see on politico.com is that one out of six of the 30,000 voters his people interviewed were Republicans who ran away from Trump. One out of six. Another one out of six who voted were first-time voters motivated to vote against Trump. And interestingly, in 2016, roughly one out of six exit poll voters were motivated for the first time to vote for Trump. So Trump motivated a lot of people to vote for him in 16. And in 2020, I think because of COVID in particular, according to Fabrizio. So what Fabrizio is basically saying is the election was lost largely because rhinos, in effect, didn't vote for Trump after Trump told them to take a long walk off a short pier.
Where's your question here? Where's your question?
Well, so what I'm giving you is some hard evidence.
That's not hard evidence. Well, let me see. Who is this guy? I don't get to see what his poll. I give you hard evidence. You say, well, let me look into it. I don't see it. I don't know this.
You should
guy.
Look into it.
That's
if you Google Fabrizio.
What's the question?
I believe that his I have three data points for you. The first one is his poll, which identified that the reason for the loss was the loss of Republican support from Republicans in the middle. Raffensperger, who I know you don't give a lot of credence to, but he identified 30,000 Republican primary voters in 2020 who didn't vote in the presidential election. And another 30,000 votes were cast in Georgia in 2020, where all the down ticket Republicans received a vote, but the presidential race was left blank. And the margin of victory, as we all know, was just under 12,000 votes in Georgia. When I looked at county level statistics from every county in the country, and you look at red states and you look at blue states and you look at red and blue counties and purple counties, on average, when you look at Trump's share of the vote as a percent of all the votes that were cast, Trump did about 2.5% less well across the country in 2020 than he did in 2016. This is my data. 2020 than he did in 2016.
That's right. You just validated the scam. That's right. You're beautiful.
Right. Mike's argument is this was done in every state to hide the states where it mattered.
Everywhere. Exactly. Well, you just validated it for me.
So that's bananas. And the reason I say it's bananas is because, first of all, most states have different voting systems than every other state. And many times counties have different voting systems. So to have a consistent...
What do you mean different voting systems? Do you know that all the computers that they run off a thing called GEMS and ESNS is the biggest computer company in the country that runs our elections? Out of Omaha, Nebraska, they are the biggest machine company. They haven't sued me yet. I'll pile them right on the pile which would be fine. I want to ask you this. Let me ask something here. How do you explain? Let's talk about Crooked Brad Rassenberg. If you're a Democrat in Georgia and you plan on winning, for me, this isn't about Democrats, Republicans, or Donald Trump. My whole life, since the spring of 21, when Jimmy Kimmel asked me, Mike, if the shoe was on the other foot and Donald Trump was selected like you say Biden was, would you still be sounding the alarm? And I said, yes, I would. And everybody knows I would. I don't. It doesn't matter. I think it's a blessing that Donald Trump, they did take it then, because what we've learned now in the last 3 years, in Georgia, in the summer of 22, three Democrats, this nice lady, her and her husband got zero votes in her own precinct. Now there, how do you explain that? You can't. My question for Ken, how do you explain? I'm here to tell you that this was in every state. It was in every state, every county. And you're saying, well, they have different systems. No, they don't. They all run off gems. ESNS, we have the same ballot images that came out of Mesa County, Colorado, that came out of Smartmatic.
So how does he explain it? How does he explain it is the question.
No, I'm explaining to you because if they're on the internet, they're all horizontal. Okay, they're all horizontal. ESNS was with me. Their owners were with me at a Senate hearing in Louisiana, and they were asked, "Are your machines more secure than Dominion's?" They said, "Absolutely not. They all have back doors. They're all hackable." Now they're horizontal hackable. Just because I have a computer at my pillow, one's a Dell and one's an Apple. They can be connected through the internet.
Okay.
Guys. Okay.
So that's Ken, how do you explain that? I guess.
Yeah. So I'm dealing with a lot of moving goalposts here. So
yeah, I know.
I'm struggling with trying to keep up and to, again, have trying to do something productive in what we talk about. So
let me frame it this way, Ken.
Let me say this. I have two things to say. The first one is, you know, it's really difficult and frustrating to bring out pretty hard facts, like I just did with Raffensperger's facts, Fabrizio's facts, my facts, and they're sort of brushed off. And what you're presented with are more hearsay type things that don't necessarily have the solid evidence, recreatable evidence that you need to survive legal scrutiny that you have to have. And the story that I'll tell you is that in my engagement with the Trump campaign, which started off with just find us the dead voters, find us the people who voted twice. And what the lawyers who I reported to quickly appreciated that we really understood what we were doing and that we were thorough. And they asked us to start performing their due diligence on the claims of voter fraud that were pouring in from all over the country. And we did that. And we were asked to basically vet each claim. And if it stood up and would survive legal scrutiny, they were going to go to court with it. If it didn't stand up, they weren't going to take it to court because they didn't want to be involved with false claims and bringing forward bad data into court. We looked at 20 claims from across the country. Every one of them was false, oftentimes because whoever did the analysis didn't fully understand what they were looking at, a claim of 750,000 duplicate votes cast in Wisconsin. Well, they missed all the online votes, all the in-person votes, and that was the difference. We had a whole bunch of claimed duplicate votes, deceased votes, where people matched on names and addresses and dates of birth and said, hey, it's a match. It's got to be the same. Well, it's not the same guy. And it usually isn't much more than it is. And some of the claims were just bonkers out the gate and would never have survived because they had no data behind them at all. Nothing recreatable, hearsay evidence, which no judge in the country is going to allow. Right. So that's what we dealt with in November of 2020. And I was up pretty much the whole month as well, Mike. Dealing with all that. And, you know, it's hard to have a conversation where, you know, you're looking at it, you're trying to deal with it scientifically, you're trying to deal with it with credible, recreatable evidence. And one of my favorite saying is, actual fraud is detectable, verifiable, and quantifiable, right? You got to have those three pieces in order to be able to bring data into court successfully and not get bounced out on your rear end. So, right. You know, that's really where I came at from it. And, you know, look, I believe strongly that we can and should be doing much better. I'm not so much focused on the actual execution of collecting votes on election day as I am on voter registration, the dirty data that sits around, all of that sort of stuff.
Right.
I believe we can and should do it much better than we do. And I think that's the most productive place for everybody to turn our attentions to try to increase our election integrity moving forward.
Mike, I've got a question for you, and this might require a little soul searching. I just want let me get the question out, and then you can take it wherever you want.
Okay, all right.
You had, at least for a period after the 2020 election, what we might call access to the former president, Donald Trump, at least to some degree, if not directly, it seems to be reported at least indirectly. Why do you think that the guy who had the biggest incentive to find the most direct path to identifying the fraud, why did he take Ken's word for it rather than yours, if the case you're making is so convincing?
You know, David, you'd have to ask him that. But I will say this is I look at the 2020 that it didn't get overturned back then because I believe we would have lost our country forever if it would have been flipped back to Donald Trump. And I say that with all sincerity because of so much we have found over the last 3 years. And to now we can be proactive. You fix things like my company in 2012, we took in $100 million, but we were $6 million in the hole, employee owned company. But we learned from that. We pulled it all in house. We took apart what went wrong, deals that went wrong, betrayal, all these things. By the way, if you want to help my company today, you can use promo code David or Pac-Man. The last time I was on your show, they all wanted a deal. But I will say this is my company, you know, we've been attacked by all these machine companies. And you kind of wonder, why are they still attacking me now when obviously we're not going to overturn the 2020 election? I quit. That ship sailed a long time ago. I'm going, this opened the crack going, hey, we've got some serious problems and it's with these computers. And what I've done, what I'm doing now, being proactive, we're going to request that everyone in the country at LindalePlan.com, that they go there and they request their mail-in ballot. Even if they're going to vote earlier or day of, they request their mail-in ballot. Then if they get there whenever they vote and they say, I'm sorry, you've already voted. Now we have evidence that everybody can understand. Do you agree, Ken, that that would be identity theft? If I got there and someone said, I'm sorry, Ken, you've already voted.
I don't know if that works, Mike. I'll let Ken address it, but it seems that if you request such a ballot but don't turn it in, you're still allowed to vote on election day. So, Ken, would that be the ironclad way to find fraud that Mike thinks it is?
You have to, now you're dealing with the rules and regulations that every state and sometimes every county puts in, on top. And that's one of the things that makes giving an answer here very difficult to do, because you're probably going to be wrong in some places. Generally speaking, if you have requested a mail ballot, you are expected to turn that mail ballot in with you when you go to vote in person. That's correct.
And if they say you've already voted, then you can say, no, I haven't. It's right here in my hand. That's what we're saying. It's a very easy way to say if there's something wrong. If my name was used, I'm protecting my name from the voter rolls.
Yep.
They can't use my name because this happened in the 2020, especially the 2022 election in some places. And Democrats in Kansas were getting their votes were getting flipped to Republican in Kansas. And this is my teams were on the ground. And I said, you know what? They couldn't say, you know, you've already voted. And I said, they say, no, we haven't voted. But having that mail-in ballot in your hand, that's kind of a good evidence. But no, I haven't. It's right here. And
let's talk about the mail-in ballots a little bit, and then we're going to kind of be getting to the last thing here. You know, Mike, I saw a video where you seemed a little bit rattled after Donald Trump did a 180 from the 2020. This is total fraud, even though he voted by mail. Mail-in is bad. Early is bad. Absentee is bad. Then Trump, I think, realizing that he needed to say something different this year, he said, vote however the hell you can. I saw a video of you, Mike, where you seemed quite rattled and suggested sort of that it is this backdoor way to find the fraud or whatever. Yeah. Bottom line, Mike, and then I want to hear from Ken. Do you believe that absentee vote by mail and early voting inherently increase what you define as fraud?
You absolutely, you should vote same day, and that would ideally same day, paper ballots, hand counted precinct level. I have said that. I will never get off. It's harder for them to steal that day. Now, when I'm going, well, the RNC and all of them came up and the president, they said, well, vote any way you can. We're going to too big to rig is what he called it. Now, too big to rig. I'm saying if people are going to do that, this is what I'm encouraging people to do. At least protect your name. Get that mail-in ballot. Get your ballot so that you have it. And then when you go to vote in person, maybe you can't vote the day of, but you go vote in person. And if they say you've already voted, they're going to download them to my app, which is Frank Social, my election app. And we're going to take all this evidence.
You've got an app for everything, Mike.
Absolutely. We've got, this is where my thing is. I want to help save our country. And
okay. But so your answer to this question,
whether you are David Pakman or Mike Lindell, whatever you're at in politics, remember, I never was a Democrat or Republican. I was an ex-crack cocaine addict. I had never voted in my life.
I gotcha.
Just,
so Mike, but right so your now, answer is, your answer is, yes, the mail-in leads to fraud, but protect yourself by requesting your mail-in ballot. Ken, systemically, is there evidence that anything other than voting on election day in person increases what we define as fraud in elections?
So it is a fact that it's harder to commit voter fraud voting in person than it is voting by mail, where you do so anonymously and in a great many states without showing any real identification that really helps everybody ensure that the person who cast the vote is the person who should have cast the vote. Looking at voter, see, to me, if we're talking about something we can do to fix the biggest problem we have in elections, I think the biggest problem we have is that we have 50 different states doing voter registration 50 different ways, oftentimes not coordinating with each other, doing it differently, doing it poorly in a lot of cases, and some places do it better than others, right? I think we should have a federal voter registration, one place. If you do it that way, we don't have the mistakes of 50 people, right? We don't have any of that problem. And if you do it federally, you now have an identifier that everybody would have to use when they vote by mail.
You don't like that idea, though, Mike.
No, that would be insane. That's probably the most insane idea. We need to decentralize it down to the precinct level, where you're down to your own community, where you see yourself vote. That's what needs to be done the way it was before. Sometimes the best things are done by hand the people at that level. You do it at the federal level, and now you have one machine. It's just like all of our Uocaba votes now. All of our Uocaba votes are done by mail-in. There's no IDs whatsoever. This is our military. We have places like in Idaho or in Utah where they try texting in your vote and texting or emailing in your vote. Now, come on. You have a federal thing there, and you're going to trust one person now on these computers. Okay, we're supposed to trust that. Why not trust in our own backyard at the precinct level and do it at that level?
What about that, Ken? What about the single point of failure of that?
There's no single
point. No, I'm asking Ken. I'm asking Ken. Does Ken agree that there's a single place where this could go wrong?
So, my question to both of you is, do you trade stocks?
No, I hold low cost index funds for a really long time.
Mike, do you trade stocks at all?
I used to.
Okay. Do you trust those computers? Do you trust those computers?
Absolutely not. If there is something wrong, I would check it, and I would have a way to check it. You can't trust computer. There can be mistakes in all computers. Let me tell you something, Ken. When our election, when there's a hack or a breach in computers or a mistake, it can be, you hack in, you get people, you fix it, you have better control, or you fix the hack and then insurance covers it. It's a money thing. When it happens in our elections, you can lose all your freedoms. That's the difference. And we should not be using them. I would not trust any computer in our elections ever again, knowing what I know now. You can't do that.
So what makes this, again, makes this so incredibly difficult is I think Mike believes that Trump's voter fraud investigator, me, Trump's pollster, Fabrizio, and Secretary of State Raffensperger, all three of us, who, using different methodologies and using different data sets completely, all were able to show that the election, the reason for the election loss wasn't fraud at all. It was literally the loss of moderate support from Republicans that caused the loss, because it was a narrow loss. And there's not that many rhinos, let's face it. But those rhino votes mattered in the close races. Mike keeps claiming his basic premise is fraud is everywhere. There are small amounts of fraud everywhere. There is no evidence at all that massive amounts of fraud were everywhere. I gave that message to the top Trump campaign attorney that I reported to, Alex Cannon. He brought it to Mark Meadows, who, in response to the finding, hey, we looked and just didn't find any fraud to change the results. His answer was, well, that means there's no there, referring to the claims of voter fraud being relatively empty. So I get your zeal, Mike, for solving a problem. The problem is you have to make sure the problem exists before you go to what I think. Yeah. Wait,
hold on. We're giving Ken the last word here.
You have to, before you go to extremes, like we're going to roll back computers and go back to the Stone Age in terms of counting votes, you better have solid evidence that there's a problem then you haven't shown me that evidence. It has to be verifiable, quantifiable. And I haven't seen it, and I'm happy if you want to deliver me a whole bunch of stuff, I'll go through it. But to go there without having the evidence, I believe, is dangerous. And it's leading us on a conversation that moves us away from addressing the things that we really should be fixing.
Why, gentlemen, listen, Mike, I'm so sorry.
All you have to do is go to frankspeech.com.
The evidence you claim is there. I gotcha.
It's all sitting there.
I gotcha. I gotcha, Mike.
Record. This is about a lady that got zero votes in her own precinct, yeah. You guys.
All right, we're going to look at it. This is the, you know, at some point, the conversation must come to an end. Ken, real quick, you don't want to melt down the machines to turn them into prison bars the way Mike wants to do, right?
I think that we would find that it would be incredibly difficult to do our elections by hand. It would take far longer than we think. And who's to say that those people who are counting late at night aren't going to make their own errors? So,
not to mention, we have better ways at this point of making prison bars than melting machines down, I would say.
Exactly.
Listen, gentlemen, Ken Block, Mike Pillow Lindell, you've really said it all. I hope that the audience gained some insights here, and I really do appreciate you joining me.
Promo code David Pakman.
I haven't tried, nor am I in a position to endorse any of Mike's products at this point.
I would certainly send you some. You got to give me your address, David. You got the most comfortable pillow you'll ever own.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Mike, it's really nice meeting you, and David, thank you for the opportunity.
Hi, folks. This is Kevin. I know for the past couple of weeks I've been meaning to get to this brief tribute to my good friend Delroy Williams, who passed away a few weeks ago. An unfortunate accident. My brother left us, and his music lives on. We're going to take a brief look at some of these songs in his career. And look at the discography, which is pretty immense if you consider that he was relatively not a very well-known reggae artist, but very upful, very good-spirited brother, one of the most upful people I've ever met in my life. And we're going to take a brief period and pay tribute to Delly. Hope you enjoy it.
Down in the valley of the hidden, where, where, fire bomb, fire bomb. Down in the valley. there's no words, no. Down in the valley of the heathen, wail, wail, fire burn, down in the valley of Jehoshaphat, wail, wail, they may run, heathen valley, heathen valley. I stayed up on the top and I watched them draw. But them no manifest, no words, no. Down in the valley of the heathen, well, well, them a run. Down in the valley of the Vatican, well, yes, fire burn, heathen valley, heathen valley. I sit upon the top and I watch them drop, heathen. But then no manifest, no words, no. Down in the valley of Jehoshaphat, well, well, fire burn, down in the valley of the heathen, well, well, them a run, heathen valley, I stayed up on the top and I watched them drop, heathen, yeah.
The mountain. way up on the mountain top. It's true, I and I red been trotting to the mountain top. Well, without a shadow in our back, way up on the mountain top.